Kruger is not just a national park. It's also not just global natural heritage. For us here in South Africa, it's an intrinsic part of our psyche, of our identity. How personal is this fight for you?
Oh, very much. I grew up in Sanin, which is a town not very far from Kruger. So talking from my personal level, that is my place, my safe haven, where I go to fill up my tank, to generate energy, to take on life every day. I'm in love with Kruger. I have been. It's my favorite place in this country, and I will always stand up for Kruger.
We're speaking to Willy Okump, a new Minister of Forestry, Fisheries and the Environment. In January, Kruger Park received a year's worth of rain in 10 days. Communities and staff were displaced. Key roads and bridges were destroyed. Minister, welcome. Thanks for speaking to Power Chat today.
Thank you very much, Tiara. It's really a privilege for me to be here and to be able to speak with you about Kruger and what's going on there. As you rightly said now, we had an immense amount of rain in the early parts of January this year, and it really created a lot of damage in the Kruger National Park, and we are now busy with the efforts to rebuild it after what happened there.
Minister, let's just say, this is one of the biggest tests you could have faced at the start of your tenure, and you have said Kruger will be rebuilt. But can we ask you, Minister, when? What is the official timeline for reopening all closed camps and restoring full north-south access?
I want to start by saying that I really want to thank the people working in Kruger National Park. I was there a week before the floods to have management meetings with them. And during that time, we received the information, the early warnings of the floods that's on its way. So those management meetings very quickly turned into planning meetings to mitigate the risks of these floods. And the Kruger National Park and their personnel really planned this whole thing to evacuate people and to protect people and nature so good that during all these floods, not one single person lost their lives and not even one single person got injured. So I think that is the first important thing to say. With regards to reopening, those same people, that magnificent team of people, have immediately started with a phased approach. So the first objective was to keep people safe, to make sure that people get to safety very soon, and to make sure that no life is lost. Thereafter, we've started to reopen roads where possible, and some of the camps that were evacuated due to them being at low levels, if those camps did not have any physical damage to the camps, those camps reopened immediately. Obviously, safety concerns were taken into consideration with access roads to those places. So it's a phased approach. We are opening as much as we can, as soon as we can. And so let me give you an example. There's three bridges between Skukuza and Lower Sabi that were washed away already during the previous floods. They were washed away again now. The detour roads around those bridges were completed very quickly. So people can now again have access from Lower Sabi to Skukuza. Other places where we have to build small detours, or we had to really do a little bit of cleanup in camps to reopen those camps, were also done. Then we've had, for example, in Mupani and Olifant's camp, the camps didn't get any damage because it's on higher ground, but the power supply to those camps and water supply was influenced or affected, and we immediately after re-establishing those services could reopen those camps as well. Then, so that is the short and the, let's say, three-week program to get those camps open. Then we've got camps that will take longer to open. Let's take, for example, Letaba. The whole of Letaba was flooded. We all saw the videos. There's a lot of damage there. But the teams have already started to work. They, as we speak, are already repairing the perimeter fence on the riverside. Cleanup operations, the mopping has been done. It's a scene out of a horror movie. If you see all these from Davos and chalets with all these mattresses and cutlery and things being stacked outside that obviously have now to be thrown away because it is just absolutely ruined. But that have started, and we are trying our utmost best to have certain areas of the Taba camp open for overnight accommodation by the end of May this year when the winter school holidays start. The Taba camp has been opened with regards to the fuel station, the shop, those areas, so that people traveling through that area can have access and have access to toilets. So it can be a pit stop at this moment. Shireni bush camp has got a lot of damage. It will take a lot of time to repair Shireni, but we will have that repaired within this year as well.
Okay, that is encouraging. So we're talking about Letaba, we're talking about Shireni. Which other camps are still closed, and what's the deadline for reopening them?
Okay, so let me give you a list of the camps that was closed but have opened since. I think that is important for people to know because people might have reservations at them. Shireni, Atelier and Biamiti, they are all three are bush camps. Then we've got the Roerewal bush camp that's also open, as well as Senze, which is a camping site close to Mupani. Then Olifants, as well as Telemati bush camps and the Nkuhi tented camps have reopened. Satara was closed at a certain stage. That has reopened. So the only big camp that is not open is the Letaba camp. Shingwesi camp, we plan to open that on somewhere in March this year. So there are some damage that we are busy with, but it's not to an extent that it will take us several months to repair that. We will be finished with Shingwesi within the next 2-3 weeks, so 3-4 weeks maybe. Then Shingwechi will also reopen. Then you've got problems, for example, with regards to access roads. The moment that you travel north from the Taba towards Mupani, you've got the high-level bridge at Letaba that the front section of that bridge washed away. They are trying to repair that, and hopefully that bridge will already be repaired and be access-worthy from the middle of March, middle to the end of March, and then it will be totally completed. All the other issues will be done by June. But by, let's say, at the latest, the end of March, we will be able to travel on that route again from Letaba north to Mupani.
So this is very encouraging news in Kruger's centenary year. So I imagine you are greatly galvanized by the centenary in May. I guess an outstanding question remains on the issue of reopening camps. Northern Kruger, of course, was the hardest hit. What is the situation there?
Well, if you take it from the north, Bafuri, as well as the Punda Maria rest camps have reopened. The Bafuri as well as Punda Maria gates are open. So it's only the Shingwechi camp in the northern area that has not opened yet. Mupani has been opened. Mupani is on higher ground. So although there was a huge amount of water and floods in that area, we've managed to reopen those camps very quickly. As I said before, we experienced some difficulties with regards to power supply, but that will restore to those camps as well, and they are fully functional.
Minister, Sandparks estimates damage of R500 million. What's the current audited damage figure, and when will a final cost assessment be published?
As we go on, we're still doing assessments. For example, Balule camp, we could not access it properly to do a proper assessment. An aerial assessment was done in the beginning when you could not access a lot of those places. But as we go along, we are getting these professional assessments. The initial assessments were estimated assessments of what the damage was, and it was clear that it can be anything between 500 million to 700 million rands. The aerial assessment indicated, let's say, on average, more or less 650 million rands of damage. But that was an estimate. And since then, professional teams have undertaken on-the-ground verification and a detailed technical assessment is underway. It confirms at this stage that what they could pick up, that is confirmed damage of 490 million. So you can say 500 million, but that is not the final estimate. The final estimate is expected by mid-March after the professional assessment is completed and after all the affected areas that is currently not accessible have been inspected. So that figure will most probably rise and go up. But I think the initial estimates of roughly 650 million thereabout will be more or less where we will be. But I mean, it's very difficult to say that. For example, as I've mentioned, Balule, you could not go in. Balule is not a big camp, but we do not know what the exact cost of the repairs would be there. So a final cost recovery will be confirmed after a proper assessment by professionals has been done.
So with all of these assessments ongoing, with all of this work in progress, can you confirm for us how much money is in the Kruger Recovery Fund today? And how much do you still need to complete reconstruction based on the current estimates?
Let me start with the last part of your question first. Kruger National Park is owned by Sandbox. Sandbox is not a government-funded organization. They generate 80% of their income from tourism activities. And you can imagine what the expenses must be maintaining all these parks and roads and doing conservation and doing anti-poaching, etc. So unlike a lot of other state entities, Sandbox are 80% self-sufficient when it comes to their money. In Sandbox, we've got a lot of different parks, some of whom are not financially viable, but they are very important from an environmental perspective. So they get funded by the income that we get from places like Kruger and Table Mountain. Kruger is one of the biggest contributors towards the cash flow and income of that 80% that Sandbox are paying or is paying towards their own cost. So this has got a huge effect on not only Kruger, but on Sandbox itself. And we therefore need to get money from various sources. The Kruger Recovery Fund, which I've launched, is a fund that makes it possible for the smallest 10 Rand donation from a student or a pensioner towards a 10 million Rand donation from a big corporate organization. Currently, that fund is working in conjunction with the fund that's been formed by the Honorary Rangers. They are also patrons of the Kruger Recovery Fund. And the Kruger Recovery Fund's currently standing at around about 500,000 rands. And the fund of the Honorary Rangers, which is also supported by Kruger, stands just over 2 million. So in total, we are at a bit more than 2.5 million. It might be closer to 3 million as we speak. But there will now be a focused approach where I have already written letters to CEOs of some of the biggest corporate entities in the country, asking them to contribute. I've had discussions with some of those people, and the feedback is really great. I think that we will see a huge spike in corporate huge money that will come in. I've also, it's very important that I want to thank Mr. Tony Park, world-renowned author, who's also involved with the Kruger Recovery Fund. Him, together with the Honorary Rangers, are the patrons of this fund. And they really assisted a lot in marketing this fund and telling people how this fund will be managed and what the fund will go towards. So we are really grateful for that. Other forms of income will be from insurance. We do not have the total insurance claims yet because we could not access all the places. But a place like Kruger National Park will always be underinsured. Nobody wants to insure a gravel road or a river road. It's just not how it works. So during the previous floods, there was about 20% of the total damage that was covered by insurance. So we believe that we will also get quite a sum from the insurance, but it will not nearly be close enough to what we need. We have also, in my department, looked at reprioritization of funding so that we can see what we can contribute from the department side as well. And then it has been declared these floods as a disaster. So we have already applied to both the Limpopo and Mpumalanga disaster funds for funding and for assessments of what they can also do. So I think if you put all of this together, you will get an indication of which amount of the cost will not be covered by either government funding, by the DFFE, by disaster funding, or by insurance. And that would be the funding that we will have to target to get in via these recovery funds and all these other efforts that we are doing. So I think we've got a huge task in front of ourselves, but we will do that. We will get there. We've got to rebuild Kruger. There's no doubt about it.
There really is no choice. Kruger National Park is global natural heritage, and it's indeed very concerning to hear how little money is in the Kruger Recovery Fund right now. One certainly hopes that the big corporates will come on board. You've mentioned that as part of your campaign. And Minister, is there some sort of concerted effort on the part of DFFE to market the Kruger Recovery Fund to the general public, and really just to make people aware of what they can do and how they can contribute?
Yes, absolutely. With the assistance of Mr. Tony Park, I've had an interview with Mr. James Henry of Wild Earth. Wild Earth is channel 183 on DSTV, has for the last 2 weeks run, and they will continue to do that. I think it's an 8-minute insert of an interview that Mr. James Henry, the CEO of Wild Earth, had with me on the fund, where we encourage people to contribute. We've got social media, the campaigns that we target with this. So we also work in close cooperation with the honorary rangers. I think when it comes to donations from people in foreign countries or from foreign entities, they are not allowed to give funding to government entities, but they may give funding to the honorary rangers. The honorary rangers can give a tax certificate on that. So we are boosting what they are doing. And I think that is also one of the reasons why you can see that the honorary rangers fund stands at more than 2 million. I believe that once we get these corporate entities on board, that we will definitely see an upspike in what the funding are that we are going to get. We must also remember that this is going to be a marathon. It's not a sprint. Whilst these recovery efforts are ongoing, this recovery fund and the marketing thereof will also be ongoing. It's not as if the marketing of this fund will end in 2 weeks' time. I told you earlier what the dates are when we suspect the Taba camp and other camps to be finalized or finished or repaired. And we will in this whole time continuously actively promote that. And I would also appeal to Daily Maverick, help us in promoting that. We've got the fund up and running. We had to get permission from Treasury, National Treasury, to open this bank account, but it is open. So I'm appealing to everybody to please assist us. We need every little bit of help, every little bit of marketing. But what is very important is for people to understand how this fund will be managed. When it comes to giving an entity like Sandparks money, people are always afraid, but will my money be spent correctly and wisely? And I can give you the undertaking that it definitely will. I have, from the start, made it very clear that there will be transparency in this, that there will be proper oversight. I've insisted, and it's been agreed to, that we appoint 3 independent auditing firms, all 3 of which are part of the big 5 auditing firms in the country, and they are involved in this process from the beginning. So if I can give you an idea, It was not formed by us. It was an auditing firm that formed this fund. There will be one that monitor the expenditure, monitor the day-to-day business of the fund. And then there will be a different auditing firm that will do the audit. So that one auditing firm does not oversee the spending and the operation and then audit itself. So there are 3 auditing firms independent from each other that's involved in this. There will not be one single cent of this money that will go to anything else than the recovery efforts of Kruger National Park. They will not use this to pay day-to-day expenses. They will not use this for any other park. They will use it for Kruger National Park and the recovery thereof. And I think all the safety nets that's been building. So this can give a lot of confidence to people out there that love Kruger and that want to donate, that but wants to do that with the certainty that it will go towards the correct applicable places. And therefore, we've instituted all these measures. And I can say with confidence that your money will not go to anything else than rebuilding Kruger.
Of course, another way of looking at this is by donating to the Kruger Recovery Fund. The public, international donors, local donors, by supporting Sandparks, Honorary Ranges, they're also contributing to South African national parks as a whole. As you mentioned, Kruger is a money spinner for other parks in South Africa. But that brings me to my next question, Minister. How long will Sandparks operate with what we imagine is a reduced tourism income? And in the same breath, what's the projected revenue loss for 2026?
Well, Sandparks will continue to experience the reduced tourism income until all the affected camps have been fully opened. So it does have a huge effect on not only Kruger, but Sandparks as a whole. The projected revenue loss for the current financial year, in other words, up to the end of March, is an estimated 25 million rand. So that is in addition to what the damage are. And for the new financial year, from April 2026 until end of March 2027, it's estimated that there will be an additional 80 million rand revenue loss. So in revenue, we're talking of more than 100 million rand that the Kruger Park will lose due to certain camps not being open, not being able to take the full amount of day visitors that can come in, etc. So we've got to cater for that as well. And we are already making plans to see how we can circumvent this. These projections are based on assumptions relating to the impact on key revenue streams. It's obviously takes into consideration the conservation fees, the accommodation, camping, activities such as night drives and morning drives, etc., and as well as the income from, let's say, a filling station at the camps that remain closed. So the effects on the income is definitely severe, but we've got to manage that now. We've been dealt with this. You said earlier in this interview that I've been dealt with this crisis, and the way to handle a crisis is not to run away from it, but it's to take it head on and to make plans and to give support, moral support, and to get people to really work together. And I want to say thank you to every single company, every single individual that have made a contribution. You know, we saw in the week after the floods how people from surrounding towns like Komatipoort and Nelspruit, Mbombela, Hoedspruit, those areas, came in and they literally brought food to people that needed that. They tons and tons of food and of clothing that were donated to staff members. And those were done by communities around Kruger National Park, communities that sometimes make money out of, let's say, having a game drive vehicle operating in Kruger Park. People's love for Kruger is of such a nature that they did not hold back. And I'm relying on everybody to do the same and follow their perfect example.
Well, Minister, in this part of the world, people adore nature. We were talking before this interview started about how people swerve for Shongololos, but there's also a real sense of community. But we can't do it alone in this part of the world. And it's all very well to spend the money once we have it. But Minister, we started 2026 with flood damage from 2023. What new flood-proofing climate resilience measures will be built this time to prevent repeat damage?
That is such an important question. If we are going to rebuild Kruger in the same way as it was designed 30, 40, 50 years ago, the same effects on those areas will happen when we get new floods. Climate change is a reality. We saw that in the amount of veld fires that we recently had throughout the country. We saw that in the floods in KZN in the last 2-3 years. And we also see this in the frequency of flooding of Kruger National Park. We had a big flood in 2000. And since then, there were several floods that came over. So 3 years ago, we had big floods. And to give you an example of the three bridges between Skukuza and Lower Sabi, those bridges washed away completely. So we had to rebuild those bridges. But in that process, we redesigned those bridges. Totally stronger, better resilient to the effects of climate change. Should there be new floods, they will be able to withstand that because it's been re-engineered way better than what it was when it was originally built a few decades ago. So we've got to do things like that. That process of rebuilding those three bridges, for example, was already ongoing, and then these floods hit. So they have done assessments on that. We are awaiting the engineer reports, but it seems as if what they built was not compromised, and we will be able to carry on with that. But we've also got to look at our roads, your low-lying roads close to rivers where you know you might get flooding again, must also be redesigned. You know that Kruger's roads, although they are tar roads, they are not made to carry heavy-duty traffic, and they are not made to carry fast-moving traffic. The faster you drive on a road, the more the deterioration will be, and the heavier the vehicles are that's on the road, the heavier the deterioration will be. So they are very slim or thin layers of tar that's on them. But in those low-lying areas, we will have to redesign them so that they are stronger there and will be able to withstand whatever climate change and flooding throws at us. And I again want to commend the people of Sandparks who really went out of their way to get this done. We've also, apart from asking people to donate money, we've asked people to also make available their professional expertise. We had civil engineers and electrical engineers and people with knowledge on all these issues of rebuilding approach us, offering their services. And it goes a long way. And I really want to thank everybody that also got involved in such a way so that we can get the best advice, get the best engineering sign-offs on this, and make sure that what we build now will be able to withstand more than what we've received with regards to these floods.
Minister, you mentioned the climate story in these floods, and of course that's not thumbsuck. There's real science behind that. I think it was done by, it was an attribution study done quite quickly by World Weather Attribution, and they found that these particular floods, January 2026 floods, were at least intensified by climate change. Minister, we haven't spoken about the impact on wildlife. Wildlife is fairly resilient, so we saw them move to drier areas, to higher areas. But we must ask at this point, what is the potential estimated extent of flood damage to fences? Therefore, what's the estimated impact on poacher access, which of course feeds into wildlife well-being, conservation well-being?
Yeah, I think it's very important that whoever listens to this interview must understand how Kruger looks when it comes to rivers. You've got several big rivers crossing from west to east in the Kruger National Park. If you start from the top, you've got the Limpopo River, coming down south, Lwubu, then the Shimwezi, the Letaba River, Olifants River, Sabi River, and right to the south, the Crocodile River. All of these are big rivers crossing into Kruger Park, but it's not only the rivers that has got an effect. It's the catchment areas of those rivers. So it might be that you don't have rain within Kruger Park, but it rained a lot in the Middelburg area or in the Polokwane area a week ago, and that water then reaches Kruger. So it has got an effect on whatever we experience in Kruger. On the fence of Kruger, you've got sacrificial boundaries or fencing over those rivers. Fencing that whilst those rivers are not in flood, they keep animals inside. But once the floods come, it literally lifts up the fence, and you know that you're going to lose fencing when floods come in those specific areas of the riverbeds. They have already been repaired as far as we could go, but those rivers are still in flood. So as those rivers subside, the sand park will go in and repair that to make sure that we minimize human-animal conflict and prevent animals from going out. But there is substantial damage with fencing, and we need to look at that. We need to, we saw the whole issue of foot and mouth disease. We've got to repair the western boundary of the Kruger National Park to make sure that we can keep buffalo especially contained. That fence are in certain areas very damaged, so we've got to look at that as well.
Let's talk key roads right outside Kruger Park. These are provincial and municipal responsibilities. We get that. But these roads were poor before the floods. Now they're unsafe. And this undermines your department's mandate. So, Minister, what legal or regulatory powers will you use to compel cross-department action to restore access? And what sort of deadlines are we looking at?
The fact that these floods have been declared as a disaster really helps a lot, especially with interdepartmental cooperation. We've already had two meetings that was attended by COCTA, the Corporate Governance and Traditional Affairs Minister Slabisa, together with the premiers of both Limpopo and Mpumalanga provinces, their MECs, my department, myself, well, I attended both of those meetings. We had a lot of role players coming together due to this being declared as a disaster area. And what you have mentioned now as challenges have been discussed in those meetings. It's being dealt with. We, from our side, said to them that we need to have an income in Kruger, but to have an income, we need to have access, and we need to look at how we can get those roads repaired as soon as possible. There's a large amount of people living just outside of Kruger that generates their income from within Kruger, whether they are rangers working there, whether they are cleaning staff or guides. There's a lot of people living in those provinces that depends on what is going on in Kruger National Park. So I believe that the urgency has been conveyed. I believe that the people will really try their utmost best to get those roads repaired. And again, during those meetings, we also discussed the way of resilient building, of telling them that it must not be quick fixes. We must really, if we repair a bridge or a road, we must make sure that it will withstand more flooding and severe weather patterns in the future. So let's hope that we can get that cooperation from my side. We are in constant communication with them. We'll give our full cooperation, but we expect the same back.
Minister, we're running out of time. Just a few more questions, if I may. Kruger is not just a national park. It's also not just global natural heritage. For us here in South Africa, it's an intrinsic part of our psyche, of our identity. How personal is this fight for you?
Oh, very much. I grew up in Sanin, which is a town not very far from Kruger. We went there as children very often. I have been going there myself since I've been an adult for almost 40 years now. I'm there every year. So talking from my personal level, that is my place, my safe haven, where I go to fill up my tank, to generate energy, to take on life every day. I'm in love with Kruger. I have been. It's my favorite place in this country, and I will always stand up for Kruger. But as I am feeling about Kruger, a lot of other people are as well. People are really, it's a passion for them. And Kruger is this icon in South Africa. People come to South Africa from foreign countries on tourism, to tour here, and they go to two places primarily. They go to Cable Cars and Table Mountain, and they go to Kruger National Park. Kruger National Park is a natural asset, our biggest, I think, in this country, if you look at the contribution that it's making. And I really think that there's a lot of people that are as passionate about Kruger that I am, and that would love Kruger to recover to its fullest glory and even better. We are custodians. We are managing this for a small period in time. But we've got the obligation on us to hand it over to the next generation in a better way than what it was when we found it. And we must hope that we raise that next generation so that they one day would do the same. So this is a responsibility, but that responsibility comes with passion and compassion and caring for this wonderful place.
We missed an important detail. We got most of that answer, but you briefly broke up when you spoke about your safe haven, where you grew up. What was the name of that town?
I grew up in Tzaneen. So when we went to Palaborwa to play rugby or do athletics as young kids, my father always made sure that we make a weekend out of it. We used to stay in Letaba that has now been flooded many, many times. I go camping with my family in Kruger National Park every year. And when I became the minister, they said, "No, minister, we'll have accommodation for you. You don't have to camp." And I said to them, "Sorry, guys, I'm still going to camp. I camp in Satara every year for quite a number of nights. I love it. It's just okay. It's just fantastic."
That's very encouraging to hear. And your passion for Kruger will hopefully be infectious in a way that can drum up support for exactly what it needs. I would like to ask you two more questions. They're not Kruger-related questions, but they are questions that South Africa is deeply divided on and looks to you for leadership. Canned lion hunting. Is canned lion hunting being closed down as per the DFFE's stated position, which is that it must be closed down?
Let me start off by saying canned lion hunting is wrong. When I became the minister, there was a lot of rumors in the media, a lot of false information that was spread linking me personally to the lion industry, canned lion industry. I have never owned a lion farm. I've never been involved in the management of a lion farm. Neither has any of my family. This is just not true. But I drown out the noise. Canned lion hunting is wrong and it should be stopped. There's no doubt about it. Contrary also to the beliefs out there, people said that I was the minister that stopped the mandate of the ministerial task team regarding lions. It was not the case. That task team ended on the 30th of November. The mandate ended on that date because that was the date that was set by my predecessor for that task team to do their work. I have been approached by that task team and asked if I would extend their mandate with 3 weeks for them just to finalize their report, which I have done. I was the person that extended that term, and I'm now awaiting that task team's report. Once we've got that report, we will be able, obviously, to go through it, and the department is we're waiting for that. So the moment that we get that, we will be in a better position to see what the way forward is and what the recommendations are. And I'm looking forward to have that. I had a discussion with the chairperson of the task team last week, and he asked if it would be possible for them to come and present it to me this week already. So I'm waiting for it. It might still happen this week, but I don't think that it will take longer than next week for me to get that task team's report. I'm looking forward to that, and we will then from there see what it is that we can action on this.
When it comes to the court finding that captive bred rhino horn can be sold internationally, is your department going to accept or challenge that finding?
No, we have already lodged the appeal. That was even before I became the minister. And when I became the minister, they asked me, would I like to carry on with the appeal? I studied law myself. I had a look at the judgment and the court papers and what transpired in this. And I said that we must carry on with this appeal. According to us, and I don't want to speak ill of the judge or the judgment, but according to us, there were errors in law that were made. And should this judgment carry through, it will have repercussions for us with regards to what CITES will do and how CITES and other people will see us. So we are definitely carrying on. We have lodged leave to apply for appeal, and we are awaiting their judgment.
Minister Willie Okump, we thank you for your time and wide-ranging insights. We appreciate speaking to you today. We wish you the very best in the fight to rebuild Kruger.
Thank you so much. And thank you for also amplifying this. I really appreciate it a lot. Let's get people out there to become involved. We've got this Kruger National Park. We cannot lose it. We've got to help it to advance. We've got to help it to survive. I'm there. You are there. I can see that clearly. And millions of others are. So let's reach out. And I will ask that my staff send you the banking particulars so that you can also maybe help us to market that of the Kruger Recovery Fund.